Blog Talk Radio. With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, I'm in the sunny New York City. It has calmed down from the high temperatures. It's gorgeous out, but I'm inside. What can you do? I would bring this out into the streets, but I don't have Wi-Fi on my computer, so I just have to sit here and look out the window instead. I got a great show. I came back from Rochester, New York, and looking on the Erie Canal. And one of the things I went to Rochester for was this big celebration of the 19th Amendment that took place at the Susan B. Anthony House and the Susan B. Anthony Park, which is across the street. So we're going to have Deborah Hughes tell us what that was all about, what it all meant. And then I was in Fairport, as it is described as a hidden jewel, and Cal Wisikowski will reveal the secrets for living there. Then I got Jerry Ashley, who's going to talk about Lyons, and I mean Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, another town along the canal. And then la-ti-da, that's what owner Maureen Becker says about her restaurant. And right before I open up the phone, of course, we have to have a message from our sponsor.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy tale brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these wonderful brownies if you go to www.brownies.com. It's not something that you readily see in your stores, unfortunately, unless I think if you're in Phoenix, Arizona, where that comes from. But I'll just sit here and drool the heck with it. Right now, well, I have one of my favorite people that I just met on the air right now, Deborah Hughes.
Hi, Merle.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, very well. We're having good weather here in Rochester, too.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it was pretty good when I was up there, too.
Better today.
Yeah. Good. So, first I want you to tell us all about the whole thing with the 19th Amendment and what that was about and how it came to be.
Right. Well, the 19th Amendment is the amendment that guaranteed women in this country the right to vote. And it took 72 years to get from the Women's Convention that was in Seneca Falls here, about an hour from Rochester, to the passage of that amendment in 1920. And so every year we celebrate with the Neighborhood Association. The house is located in an urban area in Rochester, right in the heart of town, and is in the middle of a preservation district. And so for years, we have been celebrating in August the anniversary of the 19th Amendment. But this year, it was the 90th anniversary. So we were particularly excited about that occasion. So we had Congresswoman Louise Slaughter here to kick off the events and some other political speakers, our elected officials locally. We had some women who are doing entrepreneurial businesses who were providing vending in the park. We had some food and celebrations, and we also invited Hochstein School of Music to be a part of the mood in the park that day. Hochstein is a local school that does amazing work with children all the way through adults, and they were celebrating their 90th anniversary as well. And there's another fun connection, which is that the building where Hochstein is housed now for many years was Central Presbyterian Church. And when Susan B. Anthony died in 1906, it was the largest downtown church, and so they had her memorial service there. So it was a great way to partner here in Rochester.
That was really great. So can you tell me, like, you know, you said it took 72 years, huh?
It did. A huge, tremendous work. The women thought that they had a break around the passage of the 14th Amendment, which was after the Civil War. It was the 14th Amendment, and which is now being discussed in the press, that we said that anyone who was born in this country is a citizen of this country. And that was in large part to guarantee citizenship for people who had been enslaved or who and had been born here, and to clarify that they were citizens now at the close of the Civil War. The women said, ah, I'm born here, therefore let's not be confused, I'm a citizen. And that was in 1872 that a group of women, 15 of them here in Rochester and other places around New York State and other places in the country, built a case, convinced some election commissioners that they were eligible, registered to vote, and then actually went and voted.
Because what did it say in terms of voting?
Because they said, based on the 14th Amendment, I'm a citizen, and therefore
right.
I should be eligible to register.
Okay. So in other words, there had already been a law or something that actually said that all citizens were allowed to vote.
No, you've got the right hitch there, Merle. That's the interesting piece. Susan B. Anthony got arrested, and later there was a Supreme Court case from Missouri, went all the way to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court observed that being a citizen in this country doesn't entitle you to vote. We actually know that. You have to be 21. You have to be 18 years old now. You have to be 21
right.
when I first was able to vote. People who are incarcerated as felons are ineligible to vote. There are other. Each state was able to determine who could register to vote in a federal election. That was a right of the states. And so the Supreme Court said, yes, being a citizen is a prerequisite to vote, but it doesn't guarantee you the right to vote. So citizens did not necessarily have the right to vote. That's when the women's movement decided to go in two directions. One was to bring any new states into the Union, like Utah, Wyoming, Washington, the Western Territories, to establish voting rights there so that those states could then, women would be eligible to register to vote and could vote nationally. And that would then demonstrate that the world didn't come to an end when women were granted that right. The second strategy was to pass a constitutional amendment that would guarantee that no state could prevent a woman from voting. And that's what the 19th Amendment says.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay, now I got that. So who were some of the, aside from, so in other words, Susan B. Anthony like headed this whole thing, or she was the one who said, tough noogies, I'm voting?
Yeah, you know, sometimes she gets credit she shouldn't get. In 1848, when the Women's Convention was held in Seneca Falls, where they proposed suffrage for women, Susan B. Anthony wasn't there yet. She wasn't on board with the movement. That was Lucretia Mott and Matilda Joslyn Gage and Elizabeth Cady Stanton is the name that most people recognize.
Right.
And another person who was a great spokesperson on behalf of women's suffrage at that first convention was Frederick Douglass. And Susan B. Anthony didn't get on board till 4 years later. Anthony, however, is often the, you know, she got to be on the coin, and she's the name that people recognize because she became very much the icon of the movement. She spent for all the years from 1852 up until her death traveling and speaking all around the country and even to Europe three times on behalf of women's suffrage. So she would be the first to say, it wasn't me, and it wasn't all about me, it was about this growing movement that started with a handful of people and then eventually gained enough momentum to change the hearts and minds of the country. But so she became symbolic of the movement. and when the 19th Amendment was passed, which was actually 14 years after she died,
mm-hmm.
it was nicknamed the Susan B. Anthony Amendment.
Ah, okay. Now, what was the relationship? Because in the park, she's sitting with, there's the statue of her having
Frederick
tea. What's the relationship in the movement? Where did he come into this?
Yeah, he was a marvelous proponent of women's rights. As I said, he was at that first convention in Seneca Falls. They adjourned that convention and met a few weeks later in Rochester, and he was there as well. In fact, the day that he died, he was appearing at a women's convention in the D.C. area, and Susan B. Anthony was on the dais with him. And the story says that when he went home and he was telling his wife all about the events of that convention when he had a heart attack. Anthony and Douglas met each other prior to the Civil War. Douglas was living here in Rochester. He had his North Star paper, and one of his big supporters was Susan B. Anthony's father, Daniel Anthony.
Uh-huh.
And on a Sunday afternoon, if you went out to the Anthony farm up here, you would find William Lloyd Garrison, Frederick Douglass, and even John Brown speaking and mobilizing for abolition. And that's where Susan B. Anthony met Frederick Douglass. And they had a friendship for the rest of their lives. They did have a falling out around the 15th Amendment, however.
Which was?
That was the amendment that said that no one could be denied the right to vote on the basis of prior servitude. In other words, some states were saying, well, if you were ever enslaved, you can't get the right to vote. But it was also the first time ever in the U.S. Constitution that instead of using the more generic men or mankind,
right.
it actually said no male person can be denied the right to vote on the basis of prior servitude.
Oh, how do you like that?
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the reformers who were for abolition and who were also for women's rights said, well, we should get black men the right to vote if we can, and we'll have to keep working to get women the right to vote, and, of course, black women as well to get the right to vote.
Right.
And Anthony felt that if they divided the movement, they would lose so much momentum, and, of course, they really did, because a lot of the supporters who had been very vocal and supportive for the whole equality movement were not as much interested in women's suffrage.
Now, this is, there's a difference between the word S-U-F-F-E-R, right?
Yes, yes.
So it's not suffrage.
No, suffrage is vote. S-U-F-F-R-A-G-E.
Yeah. Although, in terms of a lot of things regarding men, it should be suffrage.
Yes, yes, and a lot of things around oppression in general.
Still hanging around, yeah.
And it's also interesting, in the time period, they didn't call it women's suffrage. They called it woman's suffrage because it would be one woman who would vote at a time. So we weren't getting a vote for all women. We were getting a vote for each woman.
Wow.
So people sometimes ask us why we call it woman's suffrage. And, when we use that phrase, that's why.
Wow. So now let's go over to the house. So tell us about the house too, the Susan B. Anthony house.
Sure. The house was purchased by Susan B. Anthony's mother, Lucy, in 1866, and Lucy moved in with her daughter Susan and her daughter Mary and assorted other people who lived with them. And at that point, Lucy had been widowed. And all of the energy of her daughters was focused on reform for women. They had just worked for a number of years on passing the Marriage and Property Act in New York State so that a woman could have a bank account and could enter into a contract and could own property in her own name. They were working on marriage reform laws as well. And Susan B. Anthony at this point was traveling all the time, speaking on behalf of suffrage. She would sometimes be gone as much as 8 months of the year, going out west, going all over the place. But her home base was this house at 17 Madison Street. And it was her home base until she died. The really exciting time for the house was in the 1890s. At that point, the national woman suffrage and the American woman suffrage movement had merged together to form NAWSAW, the National American. And Susan B. Anthony was president, and the headquarters were here at the house on Madison Street. And at that point, they were sending petitions out and speakers out all around throughout the West, as well as organizing the national conventions that would happen to push for the constitutional change in D.C. And they were doing so much work that they needed a bigger house, so they added a third floor that was all about the movement. And so they could have the stenographers up there and all the record keeping, and that's where they wrote a book called The History of Woman Suffrage in all of its volumes. And the purpose of that was to tell the story. And so the books would be sent out to reading groups that they might be, you know, might be a group of women who were quilting together, and someone would read about this radical movement for women, and the hope was that would then motivate them, and they'd organize locally, and they'd get on board with bringing about this great reform. And the house then stayed in, actually Mary bought the house from her mother as Lucy aged, and owned it. Susan B. Anthony died in the house in 1906, and then Mary died a year later in 1907. And at that point, the house on Madison Street had been so important to the movement that they talked about making it a memorial. But women didn't have the right to vote yet, and they decided that taking care of a house would be a distraction. So they sold the house. They broke up the housekeeping. Things were given away and sold and sent away. And for 40 years, it went to be just a house on Madison Street. Was a boarding house and carved up for apartments. And it finally, in 1945, the Rochester Federation of Women's Clubs, who'd been founded with the Anthonys, got together and said, maybe we could at least put a sign up at the old house. And they came, and actually the people said, oh, we'll sell you the house. At that point, the neighborhood had transitioned. It was very much an urban neighborhood, a lot of poverty, and it looked like a great idea to the homeowners. So these women bought the house, and they established the Susan B. Anthony Memorial and incorporated it in 1945. And we have been a museum and historic house site and now our National Historic Landmark ever since then.
Now, how about, like, all of the items that are in the house? How did you get them then?
Yeah, we have about 5,000 items in the collection. That's everything from letters and papers and photographs to buttons and pins, and then, of course, what really makes the house's furnishings. When the women got together in 1945, there were still some people who were living who had known Susan B. Anthony, including a couple of her nieces and other people who'd been very engaged in the movement, Carrie Chapman Catt, who'd stayed in the house when the Anthonys lived here. And they wrote to people and said, we're starting this memorial. Will you send any appropriate items back to the house so that they can be kept in perpetuity? And so that's how we got some of the most wonderful items that we have, like the bed in which she died, the wonderful sewing machine that they gave to their stenographer, Anna Dan Mason, when she was getting married in the house in the 1890s. Anna Dan Mason was still living and was delighted to give the sewing machine back to the house. And items are still coming. Just this past May.
Oh, really?
We had some letters from one of Susan's favorite nieces, Ann Anthony Bacon, from about 1945 to 1952. And she wrote and said, I've got this trunk of Aunt Susan's that I'd like to send. And then another letter would say, I haven't sent the trunk yet. I'm still rather attached to it. But then another letter would be, I am going to send you that trunk because you really should have it, but it's not in good enough shape to travel. For 7 years, there's this. She's talking about the promise of this trunk. Well, in May of this year, here came Ann Anthony Bacon's granddaughter, Carolyn French, with the trunk. It had finally found its way home to the house. And in the trunk were some very priceless items, including a cross-stitch sampler that Susan B. Anthony started when she was 11 years old.
Now,
so we're still,
are
still
these
adding
the items, by the way, that are in the carriage house?
For the 19th Amendment, we did a special exhibit in the carriage house of some items that had recently been acquired that are not usually on display.
Okay.
So we had some suffrage quilts that were given to us in December, and we did have some of the other items that, yes, had just arrived recently. Some of those items are on their way to be on loan to Disney Epcot Center's National Treasures exhibit.
Oh.
And we have some other artifacts that are on loan to the state of Washington for 2 years because they're celebrating 100 years of suffrage, women's suffrage there. So it's a real joy for us to be able to share artifacts so that other people in the country can have a chance to see them.
Sure, sure. So now, the way this, I mean, it looks to me like there are two houses, or was that broken into two houses? It's like when
we're actually a campus of four buildings.
Oh, okay.
17 Madison Street is the house itself, and that's where we got started. And then in 1998, we were fortunate enough to have a campaign and to purchase 19 Madison Street. And that house, which is now our visitor center and our gift shop, and is where we have the collection housed, the items that aren't on display, and that actually was her sister Hannah's house. So it's also significant historically.
So then downstairs, I saw downstairs. What was upstairs? Well, that was just administration office, right?
We have offices upstairs, and we also have the archival storage space, which is all temperature and humidity controlled and secure. And then behind those two buildings, we have a building that we call the carriage house, which is actually new. The Anthonys weren't wealthy enough to have a carriage house. We needed more space for our educational programs. We think Miss Anthony wouldn't want us to just look at her old stuff, that she wants us to keep getting people engaged in reform. So we have a whole series of programs that we do that use the tour of the house and her story as the core, but then move on to thinking about what social issues would you like to change and how would you go about doing that today.
Right.
And about half of our visitors do those programs. Mm-hmm.
And you said what were the other houses? I mean, you said there's four?
Yeah, the fourth is across the street. There's a marvelous house from the 1870s. It has this beautiful cupola. That house had gone into foreclosure and been abandoned, and the pigeons had moved in on the second floor. And a number of years ago, through Habitat for Humanity and the generosity of Key Bank, we bought that for a dollar. And it's not restored, but it's rehabilitated, and that's where we have our administrative offices.
Oh, okay.
And at that point, the neighborhood, I mentioned, had been in decline and at risk just because of where it's situated in the economy. And the neighbors really felt that our bringing that property back online made a big difference in terms of stabilizing the neighborhood.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah, so that feels like it's in keeping with Susan B. Anthony's spirit as well.
Well, that's great.
The neighborhood now is the average household income in this neighborhood in the last census was $18,000. So it's not a wealthy neighborhood, but it is a marvelous urban neighborhood. It's racially diverse. We hear many languages spoken. It's economically diverse because we have some wealthier families who are here because of the history, and we have a lot of renters. We have lots of multi-generation families where grandma lives in the house across the street and the cousins live down the way, and it's a great place to enjoy urban living. And you can go sit with the statues of Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony.
Now, aside from what I saw, because the park was like set up for celebration, is the park used for anything else? I mean, do they tend to have like other events there?
Yeah, well, because of the wonderful connection with Frederick Douglass, the Neighborhood Association and the businesses do a Juneteenth festival. That's to celebrate the folks who got word late that emancipation had happened. And that's a very lively, fun festival that happens usually the second Saturday in June and is full of lots of energy. We also have tours of the neighborhood. As I said, it's a preservation district, and there are tours where you can look at the different architecture and learn more about the canals, the railroads, the business sites that were here as well. The park is a focus for children playing and people gathering. Lots of tourists come to see the sculptures and drive through. It's a quiet place. It wasn't when you were here, but on a normal weekday, it's a very quiet neighborhood. But that park, and those sculptures are very central to the spirit of this neighborhood.
So it's not used like, okay, let's there's an event every month or things like that.
Right. No, that's correct.
Okay, I enjoyed the park, so, and I think the sculptures are excellent.
Yeah, the sculptures were actually made by Pepsi Cutavong, who lives here in the neighborhood.
Oh.
And he, the sculpture's entitled Let's Have Tea, and he created a sculpture that would be interactive, and it is the kind of sculpture where, we've got Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass, who are both seated. They're a little bit larger than life size, and they have their hands open in conversation, and it's not unusual to see kids sitting in their laps. The other day I went out and Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass each had a dandelion in their hands. And Pepsi, his sculptures are designed for that, for people to continue to be, they're community art. He involves the whole neighborhood in the design and the plan of the sculptures.
Well, I even noticed that my two rubber chickens, Esther and Eunice, they even posed. Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad. I hope you'll send us a picture of Esther and Eunice with Douglass and Anthony.
Oh, that actually, I had finished my blogging. Well, they're blogging because they have their own blog.
Uh-huh.
They have their own blog, so I completed their entire blog of my trip. I'm working on my own, but if you want to see, you can certainly see photos of them there.
I love it. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and they're free range, so they can go anywhere they want.
Oh, good.
That's why they travel with me so much.
Because of the free range, yeah.
How many people do you think, I don't know, I don't mean like per year or whatever, visit the Susan B. Anthony House?
Mm-hmm. We get about 8,000 visitors a year.
Mm-hmm.
People are to the house itself. And then in terms of programs that we do and off-site, we are in contact with about another 2,500 people. We get 40 to 50,000 visitors a month to our website. And in 1 month period, in May of this year, we had 90 different countries visit the website. So it's Susan B. Anthony is so well known around the world. Most of our visitors to the website are students who are doing research and learning more. We assume that because the page they land on is the biography page most often.
Oh, okay. Is there a charge to
visit? There is a charge. The charge for adults is currently $6 and $3 for students. We have other programs. People can come and bring a group and do a tea and tour, where you have the tour and then enjoy tea and learn a little bit more about the neighborhood.
Where do they have the tea?
We have the tea in the carriage house.
Oh, yes. Oh, how perfect.
Yep. And we have a lunch and lecture series from September to June on one Monday of the month. We can have 40 people for a catered lunch for that, and we usually sell those out. It's some topic related to the 19th century or women's history. And we're very excited about our women's initiatives. Those are programs for women in transition. We have found that the amazing courage and perseverance of those 19th century women can bring a tremendous amount of hope and inspiration to women who are challenged today. So we have programs with women who are in recovery from addiction, who are recently are out of incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
We have a program for women veterans who are recovering from injuries from Afghanistan or Iraq, often brain injury. We have programs. We have a local place here that deals with women to restabilize their lives called Sojourner House, and they bring every generation of women here to the house for a workshop, which is our inspiration program. And it's amazing to hear how women get engaged with the story of Anthony. One woman said nothing had helped her so much on her perspective on her post-traumatic stress recovery as thinking about what those 19th century women endured.
That's great.
Yeah. And kids, our school programs include kids choose a social issue that they want to change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's the lunch menu. Sometimes it's world poverty.
And
they get to give speeches, and it's fun to hear what they get from the programs.
So it sounds
about half of
like a busy place.
Yeah, yeah. We it's an exciting place. We have 100 volunteers who are our docents and give the tours, and they are the most amazing, dedicated people. It's a joy to work with them.
And, Deborah, what is the website?
The website is www.SusanBAnthonyHouse.org.
Great. And that's fabulous. I'll probably talk to you next year. So I had taken, it's interesting because I had come up there maybe like 3-4 years ago. And then what I was doing, I went there, and then I went to Seneca Falls.
Uh-huh.
I was doing some writing on the combination of the two places.
Okay, yes.
But and that's it's a good thing for people to do if they want to connect on the women's rights, women's things like that, and the Hall of Fame and all that, to going from, you know, from the Susan B. Anthony House and then traveling into Seneca Falls and seeing what's there. So
right. The other place we recommend is, which is going to open or reopen in October, is the Matilda Joslyn Gage House, which is in Fayetteville outside Syracuse. There has now been established.
That's opening when, you said?
October.
Do you know when?
The weekend of the 17th is their grand opening.
Oh, yeah. How interesting. I was just sitting around slating when I'm going to Syracuse.
Oh my goodness! Well, you should do it that weekend then.
I should make sure that I'm there on the 17th then.
Yeah, Gage and Anthony worked together for years and had a misunderstanding, and we are now reconnecting them in this century, because they're just incredibly powerful women with a lot to say for our time.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for calling in and telling us all about the, not just the Susan B. Anthony House, but what this was all about, the 19th Amendment. I'll probably be in touch with you again. I'm sure I'll have some questions when I write up the articles themselves.
I'll look forward to hearing from you, Mary.
But in the meantime, you can hang on to the blogs at this point.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you for the opportunity. It's great to talk with you.
Okay. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, it's Susan B. Anthony House. Well, actually, most of my trip was really to be centered on the canals, the Erie Canal. And one of the places that I went to was a jewel of a town, as we call it, a fairport, the hidden jewel. And I think I have Cal on now to tell us about this, don't I?
I hope I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me
hey,
now?
Merle.
Can you hear me now?
How are you?
Oh, just fine. Well, before we get to the canal part itself, I want you to tell us about the town. I mean, like, why is this a, you know, jewel? And what kind of jewel is it, by the way? Did they figure it out?
No, I don't think we figured it out, but it is the jewel.
Okay.
I guess if you like diamonds, it's a diamond. If you like pearls, it's a pearl. You know, but it is a jewel. It's a beautiful place.
Well, all right. So why should my fans go there? Come on.
No, there's a lot to do. Depending on your preferences, your personal preferences, there's a lot to do. If you like to be outdoors and walk and bike and hike and do all that fun stuff and boat, then there's all those options available to you. If you prefer to just sit around and watch people and boats and things, there's a lot of outdoor places to do that as well and enjoy food and beverages and friends. If you prefer arts and crafts and doing other kinds of things with your hands, we have those kinds of places as well. There's just a variety of things to do.
Well, let's get to the places that don't have to do with the boat and the canal first, because I really want to, you know, talk about that separately.
Okay.
So when you say there's arts and crafts, like what is there? I went to some stores, basically.
Right, there's stores. We have a lot of retail stores, boutique stores owned by single proprietors. The kind of stores where you walk in and they know your name, they know your birthday, or they know your anniversary, and they'll talk to you just like a friend. I mean, it's very friendly. As a matter of fact, one of our taglines is front porch friendly. So apart from the retail stuff, we have some places to eat, which some of them we took you to. We have some really fine pubs as well. So we have the eating and the shopping, retail, and a little bit of the drinking. We also have an incredible amount of festivals.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow is the Fairport Music Festival with 18 bands on 3 stages. It's fabulous. It's all outdoor, lots of food, and lots of people around as well. So, I mean, those are some of just the stuff that you can do. I'm trying to think of stores. I mean, we have sewing stores and flower stores, and we have arts. Performing arts.
You do have performing arts.
Yeah, right on North Main Street. We have a couple places. And so from kids to seniors, you can go and you can do performance, music, theater, painting, that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you're into that, that's available as well. Plus yoga. We got a lot of yoga. So if you're into exercise stuff. Actually, we were thinking about putting together like an alternative sort of medicine slant on some of our businesses, because we have a lot of that: health food stores, yoga, acupuncture, massage.
How about yogurt?
We got gelato.
Oh, you got gelato. That's right. Oh,
you know,
okay.
I don't know if we have any yogurt. I'm trying to think if we got yogurt. We have yogurt in the food store, but I don't think. Yeah.
Okay.
So, there's a lot to do.
I'm allowed to say it wasn't my favorite gelato place.
It wasn't. No, that's okay. You're allowed to say that.
Yeah, it's just you know, when you start going to the best, and you go, and also go to Italy, and then you hit a gelato place in the United States, and you know, then you go, it's not real.
Yeah, you're that's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay. What did you like about it, Merle?
About the town?
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, you know, you guys have to bring me back because I have to see when the entertainment's going on.
Yeah.
But the thing I like, in terms of the town itself, it's first of all, it's walkable. Maybe not for me, but it's.
I saw Ace on the bridge. Apparently, not for you or Ace the dog.
Yeah.
The terror on the bridge. The little dog can't walk across our lift bridge. If anybody's listening, and they. See the YouTube thing, but it's walkable. What
yeah.
else?
It's also I like the way it was set up. I mean, walkable, but it's not that there are so many streets. It's like a small town with a lot to do. That's what I kind of saw it as. Although
there
could have been some areas I didn't get to see. So that's out.
Well, yeah, and there are, I think. Yeah, one of the things, apart from all the things to do, is the things not to do, which is also really cool. I mean, you don't really have to do anything. You can simply sit and take it all in, which is something that I don't think we do
it's
enough.
It's very picturesque.
Yeah, it is picturesque.
And on a day like today,
it's like 80 degrees, sunny, clear skies, nice breeze. It's very, very pleasant. And, you know, we're a friendly town, too. You can settle right in, if you will. You don't have to feel like there's a lot of pretense, which I think is really important too.
When I come up there, we'll check out other restaurants as well. We went to the I forgot the name of it.
Irish pub, Mulconry's Irish pub.
Yes, yes. By the way, I just wanted to let you know my blog, my own. Well, I got two blogs, of course.
Okay.
I got Esther and Eunice's, my rubber chickens. They got their own blog.
Uh-huh.
And then I have my blog. And I have already completed the whole part of going to Fairport and the other one. Wait a minute.
Pittsford.
Pittsford, right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all completed. So if you get a chance, you can go look at that. And I did a little, video of talking about the lift bridge, too.
Okay, good. Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, the Lethbridge is something that for a lot of people in this area is a romantic thing. Now, and I know you're saying to yourself, ah, I can't associate romance with a Lethbridge, but there's a sound that occurs right before the Lethbridge goes up, and while it's raising and while it's lowering and while the gates are coming down, we actually recorded that professionally, and it's on a part of our website, because people who have lived here and then move away, when they come back, they hear that sound and they get like verklempt. I mean, they can't, they're like, what?
Verklempt.
They do. It's the truth. So anyway, it's really cool. And the Lethbridge, and I'm glad that you have a little bit on that, because it's nice. They stand on it. They get their picture taken on it. They get, it's very, very nice. So.
Do people tend to, like, purposely be on the bridge when it's lifting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The dock masters have to make sure that everybody's cleared, and the lift bridge operators. But, yes, going up and coming down, and it's a tradition unto itself.
It's a free ride.
It's a free ride. Yeah. I mean, you know the song. But, anyway, yeah, it's amazing what sticks with people. I mean, they'll come back and get married on the bridge. They'll get married on the boats, on the Colonial Belle that we have here. We actually had the Wedding Channel come and film someone's wedding, and then it was on one of the network shows. It was really cool. So it has a lot of romance to it, if you go for that sort of thing, if you know what I mean.
Well, so then let's yeah, right.
yeah.
Now let's get into the whole thing with the canal. First, let's talk. What I want to talk about is, I mean, a picture is worth a thousand words, but the description of what you like when you're there, it's not just this canal looking thing. There's more to it.
There is more to it. Long before I got here, in my capacity in Fairport, the leaders of the community decided to embrace the canal and make it a part of the community, as opposed to what some other municipalities do, which is turn their back to the canal and throw their trash in it. We have really made it the four corners of our community, and in doing so, I've created a public access piece to it with brick pavers and boat stanchions and, you know, landscape and amenities like benches and trash receptacles and stuff like that, so that people would find it a pleasant experience. So we have this waterway that cuts through the center of our little village, and that is true to our history. I mean, it was named Fairport as a traveler was coming through after it was built. He was enjoying a beverage at one of our local taverns and said, this is true. He raised his glass and said, this is truly a fair port. And everyone around him agreed, lifted up their glass, and hence the name Fairport was born. So
thank goodness he didn't raise his glass and say, this is a piece of crap.
Well, yeah, and he could have, because then we would be POC.
And name, this name is a piece of crap, New York.
Exactly. Well, POC New
thank
York.
God that's God
Anyway,
yeah,
he said it's a fair port. I mean, he didn't say it was a great port. He didn't say it was gas port. He said, you know,
fair.
This is fair port. So we're true to that history. And I think when you get here, you see it, and you see people. There's a lot of people here. For a small little village, there's a lot of people walking around on any given day. So that also shows me and tells me that people enjoy being into the village center and seeing one another. You know, it's sort of the old thing, you know, where neighbors see neighbors. How's your kid? How's your mom?
Right.
How's your dad? Whatever, you know. And they like to do that, have that social interaction here in Fairport, right at the canal. I mean, and they love the boaters. When you were here, we had some boats, from a resident that was at our docks, one from Texas, and they love talking to each other. They'll hang out all night and just talk about one thing or another. So, yeah, that's Fairport.
Yeah, I met a couple from both the Lady Hawk.
Lady Hawk, yep.
And it was interesting because they were talking about when, in terms of their travel and how you know, they're going all along the canal until they get to, I guess, at a point where they can actually get to the a river, or I guess...
The Genesee River, yeah.
Yeah.
It's where the Erie Canal meets the Genesee River. It's right near the mouth of Rochester, the city of Rochester, which by car is about 10 miles from Fairport, the village of Fairport in upstate New York. It takes you about 15 minutes by car. If you're going by boat, it's probably about 5 hours.
Right.
Slow down when you're here. But it's the Genesee River.
And what is the whole, like, I understand for boaters, there's a large building with showers and, showers and toilets and...
Yeah, that's one of the, there's a couple reasons why Fairport is known as one of the favored spots along the Erie Canal. And just for those who are listening that may not understand, the canal system is 524 miles long, and there are many, many communities that have been established along the Erie Canal from Buffalo to Albany, and then Albany north to Lake Champlain, and then from Albany south to New York City via the Hudson River is the waterway. Fairport is one community along this waterway. One of the reasons that we've become very popular with boaters is because early on we had electric hookups, water. Now we have bathrooms that are pristine with showers and closed doors. I mean, it's a whole very, very private. And then there, in addition to that, there's a lot of things to do. So, yeah. And we've set that up a long time ago. Now we have Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi along the canal as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's cool. For boaters,
that's
really
cool.
If I would
have known, I would have taken my little, my
little notebook.
My little notebook there. And I would have, I could have done a radio show right then and there.
Well, you can, and that's one of the cool things. Boaters love that now, rather than phones and other things. You know, they just sign on, they can check their email, stay in touch with people, check their route,
Oh,
pretty modern.
That's great. And what's what about, does it cost?
You know, it's unbelievable. I know it's kind of expensive for people, but $5 to $11 a night to the doctor.
Oh, my God, what a ripple.
I know. Take out a loan, man. Take out a loan if you're coming. Yeah, depending on the length of your boat, we charge per linear foot. So the smallest fee is $5. And for like 40 feet or bigger, it's $11 a night. And that includes all those amenities.
And what more can you want? I mean,
you could do your comedy show. What more do you want? We could throw that in to the cost.
That's true.
No,
as a matter of fact, I understand you have entertainment on that canal.
You know, it rocks in Fairport. I'm not from here, so I can say that. Fairport rocks. We have Tuesday, we have live music all through the summer with a car cruise night. Thursday, we have our gazebo concert series in our little pocket park. And we have canal days in June. It's a three-day festival that brings in over 250,000 people. Tomorrow, we have the Fairport Food and Music Festival, 18 bands. There's a lot going on. We're hosting one of the hosts for the World Canals Conference, which is later on this month, the Fairport Regatta later this month. There'll be music at all of those events, and people are really, really cool about the kind of music as well. Could be, you know, young kids, high school, you know, and just a grunge band to the fire department band to, you know, the RPO, the Rochester Philharmonic, which actually played on the Erie Canal a couple years ago and did a very lovely concert. So
That's great. Yeah,
it is good. It is good.
We'll get me up there. If I can,
okay.
And I'll do scenes from The Wizard of Oz for people.
Okay.
I haven't done that for you.
No, I haven't done that, but you do a mean Jerry Lewis. I did enjoy that.
I like him. I like Jerry Lewis. He's a nice man.
God, you make me laugh. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
I'm
so that's
so
Fairport.
Warm.
I mean, that's Fairport. You got to, you know, have a good sense
of humor
when you're here.
Wait, someone wants to say hello to you.
Is that Esther or Eunice?
That was Esther.
Okay, what'd she say?
She just saying hello. She had a great
how
time,
long?
And she wants to return there.
Cool.
And that she she's in the room with me. She just whispered in my ear. Oh, she said that she enjoyed the shepherd's pie.
Oh, right, the shepherd's pie. And you've said you've tried some of that and that you like this one here at Mulconry's.
Yeah, that's the first time that I like shepherd's pie. I don't know what, I must have been too full from, breakfast. It was like, you know, like the brain wanted the taste buds, wanted to continue to eat it. And the body said, Merlin, you're stuffed already, you know.
I know.
Calm down a little bit and save room. And I'll tell you the truth. Oh, the saving room wasn't worth it. Okay. It was interesting. Also went to that place with the chocolate.
Yes.
And tasted the ice creams. Well, the chocolate was great. But the interesting thing was the ice cream that was made with wine.
Yes, the Pinot Noir.
Yes, that was quite an interesting. It had a really nice taste, and they told me that you have to be like 21 to taste it.
Right. That's an interesting setup. That was the Moonlight Creamery, which sells ice cream and artisan chocolates, and they teamed up with our local winery, which is Casa Larga, and that Casa Larga and Moonlight put together the ice cream, which is now Pinot Noir. I don't know where people come up with this stuff, but it's called Moonlight at the Creamery or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know.
It was good. Tasted good.
It was great. It was great. Everything was good. Yeah, we enjoyed having you here and hope you come back.
Oh, yeah. I also liked, in terms of scenery, that area over, I guess, at the, well, the, I don't know, no, is that a gazebo that's there too?
Yeah. It's a very traditional gazebo where you can see the fire department band playing on the, you know, on the inside there. That's called Kennelly Park. It's a little pocket park that was recently improved, and it's a cute little area. A lot of people go there on Thursday nights. A lot of people bring their lawn chairs, sit down, listen to music. It's fun.
Yeah. So you have that part of the area up there, and then you also have down on the canal, you have stuff mm-hmm. going on too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one part that you didn't see, we have a wetlands, the Thomas Creek Wetland Walk. You didn't get a chance to see that.
Well, it was raining enough, so I saw wetlands. So.
Good. That makes I feel so much better now.
I'm happy for you, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Friday at 5 o'clock, and I'm doing this radio show with you. I think most people are probably, like, having a beer or something, right? Isn't it happy hour?
I think maybe I'll go get one to do the
Would you have Esther run to the fridge and get me, like, a cold something?
Yeah, well, I have Trader Joe's version of Corona Light.
Okay, well, isn't that the woodchuck or something like that?
No, they call it something Mexican, whatever kind of thing. But this, it's their version, and it's exactly Corona Light, and $2 a case cheaper, a six pack cheaper.
Okay, so, what does it have? Like less calories, less flavor?
No,
or what?
Nothing. It's just the same thing. Oh no, I just like the taste of the Corona Light more than the Corona. That's just my preference. Either that or Blue Moon.
I like the Blue Moon. Have you tried the Honeymoon? Made by the same genre. It's the Honeymoon, and they got the Blue Moon. Have you tried that?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that too.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is. It's got a little bit of a sweet with the honey in it. So yeah, which is cool. One, you come up if you like those kinds of beverages. We can do a flight of New York beers. We have local places that will set up. Like you have your flight of wines, you know, white and red wines. Made in New York. You can also do like a flight of beers and do a beer tasting, and it's really interesting, the flavor of the New York beers. All the microbreweries, they're very popular around here, and people enjoy it. Again, they're out recreating and looking for something different to do, and tasting a beer flight is
pretty cool. Does the canal not operate at a certain point in terms of the weather?
Yes, that's one of the disappointments. The canal is drained toward the end of November and is closed through the winter until the end of April. Now, we did have some ice skating last year. It's been something that we're working on. in cooperation with the New York State Canal Corporation. But we did have an ice skating on the canal. We're not yet at the, you know, like the Rideau Canal in Ottawa, where, you know, you can skate on it all the time in the winter. But
right.
Yeah, they do drain it. They do drain it, and that makes it tough. That makes it tough. But we're working on it.
Oh, okay. So, in other words, we got to get me up there before November.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you want to strap on some skates, then we'll call you Dorothy Hamill.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No, I don't do skates. I did it when I was a kid.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ice skating, you know, oh, yeah, forever. Well, because they had a place, and this is the weird thing. This ice skating rink is still there. This was back in the 1939 World's Fair. They had this building, and then afterwards, this building became and this is in Flushing, in Queens.
Uh huh.
And this building had then become actually the first United Nations building while they were building the United Nations.
Wow.
When they got done with it. It hung around, and then they decided, and I believe you had one side of it you can go ice skating, the other side you can go roller skating, and that was so they had that for years, and then it went into the 1964 World's Fair. I think they still kept the ice. They've kept the ice skating part ever since, all the way through, and it's still there now.
Wow. That's amazing.
With the other half an art museum. I don't know. You know, you just never know what they're going to do.
I know. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I hear you.
Okay.
All right. Well, I know that you're going to talk to my... Yeah, and you're going to talk to my good buddy Jerry Lyon, right?
I'll be talking to him. Yeah, I certainly will.
He's a fine colleague. He has some good news to share from the village of Lyons, just down the canal from us, and he's a good soul. So,
you know, you're purposely saying that because he's on the air now.
Yeah, he's on next.
Yes, and I'm here now, Cal.
Hey, Jerry, how are you?
Thanks for all the accolades. I mean,
yeah.
It's great that we've got such a rapport going here between Fairport and Lyons, because you've done such great things there. We're trying to do the same thing here in Lyons.
Yeah, well, Jerry, you're doing a fabulous job. Jerry has good news to share with you. It's just a wonderful announcement that was made today for the Village of Lyons, and we're all happy. And I'm not going to impose on him anymore. Jerry, have fun with Merle. Merle, it's been great talking to you.
Same here, and I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, same here. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Hello, Merle.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Oh, just fine.
I've been listening to the show and having a good time listening to you and with your guests.
Uh-huh. Isn't the show fun?
It is fun. And yeah. I like Eunice and Esther.
Oh, yeah. They were very, they were pleased to see you. Okay, yeah, that's their way of greeting.
Well,
you know.
Good.
So tell us, first I want to get, in terms of Lyons, I want to get into the town itself, and then we'll get into the canal portion. So first, I want to hear the good news that she was talking about that you wanted to share.
The good news is that the mayor, Mayor Kleisley, was informed today that the Office of Community Renewal had selected the Village of Lyons to receive $390,000 in grants to improve our downtown business district. Now, this is huge for us because, Merle, you were just here this past Monday.
Yeah.
And you know what work we're doing here to make Lyons more attractive to new business and to new tourism. So this was great news for us, simply because of the fact that this is going to give our business owners an opportunity to do some work on their facades as well as their residential areas of the second and third floors of the buildings in the downtown area. So this is great for us.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, it's talking about the facades. I saw murals.
Yes. That is part of Muralmania. Mark DeCracker with the Lyons Chamber of Commerce spearheaded this effort here in Lyons. It started here in Lyons, and now it, I believe that it spreads 75 miles in either direction. I should say 75 miles in total, along the canal, depicting the history of the canal and as well as the villages along the canal. As of right now, Lyons is proud to say that we've got 8 murals in our village, and they do depict everything from our village history all the way through to academic excellence at our local schools.
Wow. Yeah. By the way, I'm curious, like, if somebody wanted to say, oh, let's do a photography thing and go, you know, from one end to the other of the murals, you know, like, would that take weeks?
I wouldn't say that it would take weeks, but it would certainly take at least, you know, 3 or 4 days at this particular point to hit every village. Now, in order to spend any time in those villages, you would have to take more time than that, but that would be just to view the murals.
Yeah, just to stop and take photos.
You bet. Yeah. Because I think that what has happened here with Muralmania, which, by the way, was just recently given an award of excellence by the Erie Canal Heritage Corridor folks, they recognized the fact that the murals were drawing visitors to the villages and the importance that each of the villages has placed with their murals as far as history is concerned. It gives us a place to bring our local students, and they can learn about the village history as well.
Now, in terms of the village itself, like, tell us, like, what type of stores, restaurants, et cetera, to expect if you're there?
We have several restaurants, I should say quite a few restaurants for our small village. We have Trombino's on the Park. We have Studebaker's Grill. And we have several smaller cafes, MB's, Stoney's Pizzeria, Nima's, and Double J's. These are all pizza places that have excellent pizza. We have a great Chinese food restaurant here. But we also have a brand-new restaurant that's going to be opening, two of them, as a matter of fact. One is located in the Old Bridge Tavern, which was recently renovated. It's right on the canal, so diners will be able to have a view out across the canal as they're dining. But another one is that the Old Humanity Lodge out on 14, which is located in an old Italianite house, has been recently purchased and is undergoing renovation as a new barbecue house and bakery, and they're going to call themselves Bon Appetit. So we got you covered when you come here for food, that's for sure.
Bon Appetit. And you also have a little bit of theater, too, I understand.
Yes. The Omen Theater, I have to say that if there was ever a jewel in the downtown crown of Lyons, it is the Omen Theater. Bob Omen, who is the son, the grandson of the original owner, came back to Lyons after having some great successes in North Carolina, came back and bought the theater and put in $1.5 million into the renovation. And we were lucky enough to get you in there when you're here on Monday. And you know just how gorgeous it is on the inside. It's a great theater. It seats about 350 people, which is perfect for us here in Lyons. But they've done an excellent job as far as the renovation and rehabilitation of the theater is concerned, and they have all the new technology, and they're looking at getting 3D technology as well. But it's the oldest live-action and movie theater combination in the United States. It was built in 1914. It's something that we're very proud of.
Oh, yeah, and so you have, it's mostly movies right now as opposed to some live events?
We have had live events there, everything from our local middle school plays all the way through concerts. Just recently they had a four-piece string quartet that came out from Rochester that did a performance, and we've had people come from Hobart William Smith College in Geneva, So we've had some live action events there, and we're hoping to capitalize on some future projects with the live action, definitely.
Yeah, so you're looking at maybe the sing-along movies?
That's one of the things that we're talking about. I can say that one of the things that has been proposed is that the Sound of Music be shown there, and we have the sing-along with the Sound of Music. Now, I know after talking with you here on Monday and then also listening to you with Cal that you also do some great Wizard of Oz bits. So it would be fun to do something along those lines and have you come back and perform for us as well.
Oh, I'm such a hoot.
It would, I'm sure. But I think what is great about this is that with the sing-alongs, as you and I were discussing, that you can come in costume and sing along with your favorite songs from The Sound of Music or whatever musical could be brought back. It's just something that is that I know they're doing in New York City. It would be things that we would love to see happen here. Sure, we're a small town, but we don't have we're looking for more entertainment than what we have right now, and I think that fit the bill.
I think, you know, I think some of the theaters are doing this, I guess it's like laser shows, but it basically is you're hearing the music from a certain musician, or like the Beatles. They'll do something to the Beatles, and you're hearing the music, but on the screen you're seeing like laser lights.
I have not been to one of those performances. I've not seen one other than when I was living in Washington State. There was a laser show that we saw there that was similar to what you're referring to, and I think that would be fun because, like you said, if you've got some great music and you've got a good laser show going, that'd be something that would be very entertaining.
Yeah, that's another thing to pull in.
Exactly.
Now, also, I noticed that nice little park. What kind of happenings do you have there?
We have several events throughout the year. The largest one at this time is Peppermint Days, and we'll get into our peppermint history here in just a second. But that's our largest summer festival. We also have the fall festival called Pumpkin Palooza, which is coming up on October 23rd. And then we have Peppermint Winter Wonderland, which actually celebrates 6 weeks of the holidays between Thanksgiving week to New Year's Day. And we pull all of the events that go on in Lyons together under the heading of Peppermint Winter Wonderland and promote it so that we can get visitors from out of town to come experience our local events that we do here as well. So those are the three that we're working on right now. We just did Peppermint Days. And let me just say, you did not get an opportunity to go through the H.G. Hotchkiss Essential Oil Building, which is basically where we have come up with the moniker, the Peppermint Village. The Hotchkiss family, they actually distilled peppermint and refined it into oils that were shipped all over the world via the Erie Canal. And as a result, one of the buildings that they actually processed peppermint in is still in existence in Lyons and is going under renovation work starting in October. So that will be open here shortly as a museum. But our history with the peppermint was why we decided to utilize that as our marketing tool for the Village of Lyons. And therefore, that's why we have Peppermint Days, and that's why we have Peppermint Winter Wonderland. And our restaurants are all offering something that is peppermint so that everyone will understand that we are going to do what we can to promote peppermint here in Lyons.
Do the chefs purposely come up with stuff?
We have made suggestions in the past because, to be honest with you, with the Lyons Main Street program only being up and running for the last year and a half, which we're very proud of our accomplishments in that length of time, we sit down with them and work with them to let them know that there are certain easy recipes that they could do or alter to be able to put peppermint out on the menu as a promotion for our village. So we're working with them, and we're also hoping that they will take the initiative and come up with some new things that we haven't thought of either. So we're putting that out on the table for them.
That's really great. I mean, maybe I'll come there when something's happening.
Well, definitely, because I can tell you that the next, like I said, the next festival, which is Pumpkin Palooza, our whole thrust behind this particular festival was to build this around local Lions organizations and businesses. We're giving each one of our businesses an opportunity to be involved in any way they want to as a way to be able to get their name out there in front of every one of our festival goers. All of our organizations here in town do put together some kind of a harvest-themed food or activity that they utilize as a fundraiser for themselves to draw people in to spend their money with them. So we're looking at a situation where we want all the money that is made at this festival to stay right here in Lyons because we want to support our businesses here locally and our organizations as well.
Now, now what I would like to get into is the canal portion
yes.
of this. Is there a nearby lock?
Yes, we are at Lock 27. And we are just maybe about a quarter of a mile, half a mile away from Lot 28 and the dry docks. Now, the history of the canal, I'm sure one thing I would like to tell you is that Lyons was named after Lyon, France, and that was the one thing we did not get to discuss. A gentleman by the name of Charles Williams actually named the city when he stood out looking out across the canal, two rivers that intersect here in Lyons, and he thought it resembled Lyon, France, and that's how the name Lyons came about. So years later, when they started putting in the canal, obviously Lyons took advantage of the fact that the canal was coming through, and during those times is when Lyons grew quite a bit during that time period when the canal was being built. So there were other businesses other than the Lyons peppermint industry, meaning we had, there was the Lyons pottery. There were also, through the years, have been various and assorted businesses that have been on the canal. And in our particular location, the original Clinton's Ditch, which runs out north of the village, was the original canal, and of course, through the years, it has been altered through the years to get a straighter, better path between villages.
And now, in terms of like people, the boats coming in, if you have hookups and facilities, what's the story there?
Yes, we just recently had some renovation work or work done down on the waterfront. New dockage was put in, as well as electrical and water lines. And I know Cal was saying that they charge $5 to $22, I think is what it was, for their slip.
Yeah, 5 to 11. Yeah, that's yeah.
Yes, and ours is free of charge. We do have shower facilities for our boaters, and that is through our fire department. Our fire department installed restroom facilities and shower facilities for our boaters. So we are in the process of we're doing what Fairport has done by embracing the canal and doing what we can to draw boaters to Lyons from the canal. And that is where our thrust will be, I would imagine, with our tourism as well.
So you do have like the, because I see a lot of the thing. Is it I know that when I was in Fairport, there was a hookup that was electrical and there was like and water.
Yes.
Do you have the same thing?
We have the same thing. We have electrical and water, and we also have dumps for their unnecessaries.
Necessaries, I should say.
Yes, we have, and then plus what we have done here recently is we've put together a map that will take people into our village and see not only our historic architecture, but show them where all of our hospitality industries are, meaning our all of our restaurants, our laundry facilities, plus our grocery stores, those kinds of things, because we do realize that the voters are going to be spending time out on the canal, and we want them to spend as much time as we can possibly get them to here in Lyons.
Yes, so you can get off the boat and explore each town. That's the goal.
It is the goal, and I have to say that so many, and I heard Cal make the comment that so many villages for years along the canal ignored the canal and just thought that it was just a muddy little creek that ran through their village, when in actuality it has been shown over and over again with each one of the canal communities that does embrace the canal that it does increase their tourism. And therefore, I think that you will see here in Lyons especially that we will continue to stroke that tourism at the canal as much as we possibly can.
So what made you even come into Lyons?
My partner and I are from Washington State. Originally, I mean, you can't tell that I'm from the South. I'm from Dallas, Texas. And I had lived on the West Coast for 15 years. And my partner and I decided that we were going to relocate to the East Coast. We felt like times were right for us to make a move. And we actually explored on the eastern coast by going on the Internet. To be honest with you, we started looking at what availability there was for homes. We both knew that we wanted something vintage. We wanted something pre-1900. And so the parameters that we typed into every search for real estate, we typed in those parameters. And the Village of Lyons came up, as to be honest with you, as one of the places that had some great housing stock. So we came out here in February of 2008 to take a look at the properties. And as it turned out, we were only here 5 days, but we fell in love with the house in Lyons and made an offer on it. Long story short, from February to May, we went back, packed up our house, sold it, and moved to Lyons. I have to say that one of the things that drew me to Lyons, I should say both of us, was the fact that the architecture is so fantastic here. We are very lucky that Lyons slept through urban renewal, as it were, where a lot of other towns and villages took down their vintage downtown business corridor. Lyons kept theirs. Now, through the years, there had been obviously fires and so forth that claimed some buildings, but 85% of what was originally here prior to 1940 is still here, and that includes a lot of pre-1900 architecture downtown, including the 1856 courthouse on our square. It's the Wayne County Courthouse. You were able to see the lovely silver dome on the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very quaint little village. It's one of those places that one of my friends on the West Coast described as being almost Norman Rockwell-esque. We are very diversified here, meaning that we run the gamut from rich to poor, black to white, gay to straight, you name it. There's a little bit of everything in this village, which makes it very fantastic for, multicultural things to happen here for us. But I have to say that the friendliness of this village is probably the icing on the cake. Because when you mix together that blend of the architecture and the friendliness of the village people here, it was a winning combination for us.
Yeah, that's the village people versus the village people.
Yes, and do you want to sing YMCA with me? But no, it's...
Well, you can't see, but I'm making the letters right now.
But I have to say that we have been embraced in this community because we came here out of choice. We didn't have to move to Lyons. We could have moved anywhere that we had wanted to go. But I think it's the combination of things that we have experienced here that makes it such an attractive place for us. We own a home that was built in 1880. We were able to buy that at a fantastically low price. And let me just say, there's great housing stock here in Lyons for less than the price of a luxury car. And that makes it very attractive for those that are looking for either a summer place from the city or to come out and enjoy the rural life that we live out here in Wayne County. And that's something that was very important to me and my partner, is neither one of us wanted to go back to a city environment. So this worked out very well for us.
And in terms of location, would that be closer to the airport in Rochester or Syracuse?
You know, actually, it's 50-50, meaning we are right smack dab in the middle. It's six of one, half dozen another. Some people will even drive even further and go into Buffalo to get a direct connection if that's what they are looking for. But we have easy access to both of the airports just via the thruway, an hour in either direction, and you're at the airport either way you go. But it's our location between Lake Ontario and the Finger Lakes region in conjunction with our location between Syracuse and Rochester that makes us so attractive to a lot of folks, especially since we're right off of the thruway. We're 8 miles north of the thruway, exit 42, so come and visit us.
And in terms of also on the canal, do tour boats like ever operate on that?
I can tell you that there's a wonderful person that does a lot of tours. There's actually two gentlemen I can refer you to. One is Peter Wiles of Midlakes Navigation, who actually owns a fleet of boats that he does rent out for usage on the canal. He is based out of Macedon, New York, right up the canal from us. But he does tours, and he'll do dinner cruises and those kinds of things, as well as lease boats for people to use leisurely on the canal. And they're all fully equipped. Then if you look towards Seneca Lake, Bob Stivers of Stivers Marina also provides those same services. So we're lucky to have these gentlemen up here that understand that the canal is something that people are becoming more and more interested in as heritage tourism grows.
Yeah, like me, for instance, too.
Exactly.
I got two boat tours.
See, I've been on several of them myself, and every time I've been on them, they've been fantastic. And of course, I have to say that one of the best boat trips is to take it during the fall months so that you can see the change of color
along
the canal. It's absolutely beautiful.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to turn the tables on you and ask you, what did you like about Lyons?
Well, I did like that small town feel to it, and, you know, the walkability of it, but there was like... although I didn't get to go to many places, it looked like that there were enough places to walk into, stores and things like that. The fact that you have a theater is probably great, because let's say, you know, especially if somebody's someone who's on a boat and they, you know, it's like, okay, what do I do like during the evening? Well, you can go see a movie.
Exactly.
Or.
You know, I'm going to interject something here real quick, because I think this is important.
Yeah.
One of the best things that we have in this village are two gentlemen that go down every morning to greet every one of our boaters, and that's Bob Stopper and Jack McCrannels. Now, the reason why I mention this is because, as you said, the whole idea is to try to talk these boaters to come into your village and experience what you have to offer. What Bob and Jack do is that they go down and they talk with these folks. And not only do they get them into the village to visit our local businesses, but they also ask them, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? Tell us how we can improve your experience or other tourist experiences when they come here. And I think that's something that probably sets us apart from some of the other canal towns, because we have two gentlemen that have taken it upon themselves to do this to help Lyons promote everything Lyons and everything Erie Canal. And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's such a great idea when you have somebody that's greeting. I know that in Fairport there's a dock master, and I think that's what he does. But I think that's and in Newark, I had met John. Okay, I forgot Sarnow. I think Sarnow.
Yes.
So many names. So many names to remember. And that's the thing that I find very welcoming. What would be welcoming for boaters? That
exactly.
You get there, and even if like I don't know what I'm going to do here, you have somebody who's going to not just hook you up, but to give you some idea of what the town has to offer as well.
Exactly, and that's why, I mean, just knowing that these are retired gentlemen that really have an appreciation for Lyons, to go down and do this, I think is fantastic. As well as I think it's fantastic that we have a village government that understands that we have to reach out to the voters as they come in and are willing to work with all the entities that are out there to embrace that tourism. And I think that's something that we need to applaud our village government for, definitely.
Sure. I just thought of some idea, like when these guys might want to have something for people to fill out when they're leaving. Like,
exactly.
Where did you go? What did you like about the village? What didn't you like about the village? How could we improve it, or things like that?
And they are doing things along that line, kind of like an exit interview almost.
I'm an exit interview.
Yes, you are. That's correct. That's correct. But I just think that there are so many things that are going on in our little village, and of course having this news of the grants that were awarded to our community is something that's really big. And I have to say that I admire the other Main Street managers here in New York that are doing the same thing that I'm doing in their villages of Albion and Lockport. The problem was is that there was not a New York Main Street program in existence until September 2008. There are 1,600 Main Street communities across the country and 45 of the 50 states. The three new Main Street programs that are in New York are the inaugural programs, and they are regionally coordinated by the Western Erie Canal Alliance. So the whole thing, everybody understanding the importance of the canal, and basically if you think back on it, the canal was our Main Street for so many years. That's how we got from one village to the next.
So
embracing that history and looking at heritage tourism is the wave of the future for the canal and all the villages along the canal. And that's why I salute both Lockport and Albion for doing the same thing that we're doing here in Lyons.
Okay. Well, is there a website that people could go on to?
Yes. Let me make a recommendation that they visit our website, which is www.lyonsmainstreetprogram.org.
Okay.
And they can find out more, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions if anybody would like to contact us through that website.
Great. That's absolutely fabulous. I'm so glad I got you to call in, huh?
Well, I've had a good time with you, Merle, and I just want you to tell Esther and Eunice to have a great weekend. And earlier I made a comment about killing a bird with two birds with one stone, and they took offense to that, so I'm saying we're changing that to the two rats you suggested. So
yes.
We're going to be killed two rats with one stone.
So. Yes, I thank you so much for doing that.
Pass along my apologies to them.
Yeah, they may be rubber, but they still have feeling.
Exactly. thank you so much for this opportunity, Merle, and I hope we get to see you again.
Okay, same here.
All righty.
And take care. Have a great evening.
You do the same. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, well, let me have a quick sponsor message.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay, if I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No, that is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Oh, I just love that commercial. Did you think that was cute? Maureen, did you think that was cute?
It was so funny.
I've been asking them to give me another one that's funny, too, and they don't have any others.
Oh. Well, they'll think of some, I'm sure.
Yeah.
How are you?
Oh, hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
La-ti-da, that's what I say.
Yes, that's what I say every day.
Well, first, let's get into, introduce yourself and, tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, my name is Maureen Becker here in Rochester, New York, and we have a tea room, a cafe with a tea room ambiance called La-ti-da. It's very whimsical. It's very silly. You were perfect. You made many, many people laugh with Eunice and Esther, and I took very quickly to you. So it's wonderful to speaking to you again.
I love, absolutely adore the place. And it's interesting. I don't know. Somebody must have had a different concept or something, because when I was told about the place, she said something about there was a whole bunch of dolls around.
Well, there's a lot of ladies. I'm sure some.
I mean that. I don't know why she thought that. I think. Maybe she
That might have been the Strong Museum, which is not far from my tea room.
Yeah.
She might have gotten me.
I'm looking around there. I don't know what she's talking about.
it's very busy in a place with, there's a few dolls here and there that were actually donated by some of my fabulous customers. But the Doll Museum is quite a place to see also, and it is very close. So she was just probably a little mixed up that day.
I think so. A lot of tea, that's for sure.
Well, we do have about 65 teas from all over the world. And I keep adding to the list, and what works I keep, and what doesn't, I try.
How do you go about getting the teas? How did you decide?
Well, I had a place prior called Lady Victoria's in Spencerport, which is also a canal town. It's funny you were talking to Fairport earlier. That's where I was setting my sights when I knew I was going to be moving back to the east side of the city, and went up and down and love Fairport, and the building that I was watching didn't work out, so I ended up back in the middle, so the east siders and west siders can come, because I've never seen a city so divided by a river in my life, the west side and the east side. I'm glad I'm in the middle, though, because I am near the theaters, it makes it convenient for tour buses when they come. And it's just a great, great Victorian house in the historical, district. And we've painted it up pretty purpley, I think you noticed.
Oh, yeah. So to get back to the teas, so how do you getting the teas?
Well, so we tried at Lady Victoria's, and then I just expanded on, the herbals. And the ones this year, the past couple of years, have been the rooibos from South Africa. I get my tea mostly from Canada. It comes in loose. We do bag it, hand bag each one for convenience, you know, for busy days. We're not a formal tea room. We have lots of children. You can come in dressed either to the nines or if you're on your bicycle, you know, which I'm trying to appeal to a lot of people. It just keeps growing, you know. And then if I hear a tea 4, 5, 6 times, I'll research it and add it.
Do you actually like get teas and taste it and test to see if it's something that you're interested in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get samples
all
the time.
I got to switch on to my speakerphone. Hang on. All right, this is going to make a noise. Here we go. Noise. No noise. Okay.
That wasn't too bad.
Yeah. So you taste a lot of teas before deciding.
Yes. Yes. Tea is just, you know, growing, continually growing, and has been, you know, for the past decade. There's so many choices out there. One of the things that didn't work, it was very Asian, was the bubble tea. Big with the college kids. So when I was at Lady Victoria's, we tried that, and frankly didn't get it. Through the straw, I almost choked. I didn't understand the whole concept.
That's a whole new kind of tea thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a million varieties, and it just goes on forever.
So if somebody now, in terms of on the menu, so somebody says, you know, you got so many teas here. How can I taste them, try them, or whatever?
Well, what I did a couple of years ago, and I did have to, I will admit, I saw it somewhere else and took the idea. We have a sniffing tray with my 25 most popular ones, and they're in little tiny bottles that are tightly sealed, and we bring them to your table for because people really eat and drink with their eyes, you know, their smell and their vision first, and so they're having a lot of fun, and many, many have tried, because of that tray of samples, have tried teas they would have never, ever chosen. And so that's, you know, that's
worked
for me.
Do you have, like if you go sometimes to a winery or brewery, a flight of teas?
I don't. I haven't done a tea tasting type of event. And I don't have a flight of teas. I'll certainly, though, you know, I've very often just given someone who said, wow, you know, your Bangkok green has lemongrass, ginger, and coconut, but I'm not sure about it. And I'll just give them a cup and hope they'll want a pot.
Ah, okay.
You know, whatever works.
So I guess there's a lot of pot there, huh?
Yeah. A lot of teapots.
Yeah, okay. Before I get into the food portion, I notice you have places for people to dress up.
I have over 100 hats. We have boas and furs and capes. We disinfect them every night. That's very important. Board of Health had to... you know, check that out because the public does worry. And then I have an area because 30% of my business has become children, which I absolutely am over the moon about. And so the princess thing continues to thrive, and I just keep running and buying more tiaras and you know, fairy princess things for them. And I get a kick out of it. I mean, I'm a shopper, you know.
So they're dressing up with the hats and costumes as well.
Yes, There was another place years ago. I heard that they had adult dress up, like dresses for, you know, grown women, and we didn't go there, and I really don't think too many of my customers would, and a lot of them come dressed up, like either from church on Sundays, we do a brunch on Sundays, or they'll just want to feel, you know, like they're in a fancier tea room, because it's you know, fancy is the wrong word, but there is a kind of elegance to a couple of our rooms, and so they you know, had dressed like they're out of a magazine. We did a debutante event, and it looked like a catwalk. It was so you know it runs the gamut.
Do you find that the place caters mostly to women? I mean, I'm not caters to. That's not the word. That you find that the clientele are mostly women, because it's like tea is sort of associated with women.
Yes, and I always greet when I do see a man. We're 95% women, actually. I do get Englishmen. I always say I get the good husbands and boyfriends. And when I greet, if I'm able to be the greeter that moment and not in the kitchen, I'll say, well, the cool, secure, worldly men come to La Ti Da. Because, you know, it's not for everybody, and I realize that. And so I have said, if you want a burger and a beer, the Old Toad it's an English pub. And it's right down the street. So, but the longer I'm there, the more men I see. But it's still 95% women.
Will they dress up? Will they put on hats?
If they're cool enough, they will.
I mean, I saw one guy who was.
Yep, I had a couple today. And I see the younger generation, which is a new demographic. When I was Lady Victoria 7 years ago, the median age was like 50 to 90. They were the core tea drinkers. And what I've been witnessing and thrilled about is the college students. And they come in, and the guys and girls have no problem dressing up. The guys will even put on, if I run out of male hat, you know, fedoras and top hats, which I do need to add a few more, they'll put on whatever, and they have no problem with it. They just have a really good time.
It's fun.
You know, it's really fun, and I've tried to create a space that they can forget about the outside world. I want it more of an experience. The average visit is 1 to 3 hours, and I tell my servers, which we call nippies, which is a real old English word for a waitress known for her prompt and efficient service. And so our nippies, what was I saying?
Why were they called nippies?
Well, it's an old English word, and I wanted to be different. Everything about the place is different. There's bells on the table that you ring if you want service. So we hear, you know, bells in our sleep
right.
on busy days, and I want them to relax. They race around. The women race around all day long. And I tell my nippies, my servers, this is not about turning over tables. This is about, you know, sitting back, you know, like they did in a quieter, more gentler time. And it really works. It does work, because they have a lot of reunions, friends they haven't seen for, you know, 20 years. One time I had five generations from great-grandma to baby, and that's exactly what I was trying to create. You know, I wanted a happy place.
So in other words, would you say that every time a bell rings, an angel gets its tea?
Yes. Perfect. Thank you. One gentleman said to me a few years ago, he just came in for a cuppa, and he said, I feel like I walked through the looking glass. And I said,
yes, that's
fabulous. It is.
Well, let's get into, you want people to know that there's not just tea, that there's food.
There's food. I don't recall what you had. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, it's so good. I started off with that wonderful no calorie.
I take out the calories and I put in the
love. No calorie blueberry soup.
Yeah, we do
no
lunch.
No calorie, no cholesterol, no fat one.
I take out the calories and put in the love.
Yes,
I do.
That blueberry soup was something else.
Well, we do the chilled soups in the summer. I wish you had been there for the pear. I don't know if you like pears, but the pear soup is and the strawberry. I mean, you can take, you know, whatever fruit you like. And but we do lunch every day, and we do afternoon tea. You can actually, I noticed a lot of tea rooms have it only like from Wednesday to Sunday between 3 and 5. You have to call and make a reservation. And we've kind of figured it out that you can kind of walk in anytime I'm open and get the full afternoon tea. I did a bridal shower that, because of their schedule, had to have the full afternoon tea at 10 a.m. So I opened an hour early for them, and that's what they did.
That's great.
I like to be able to provide that.
So in terms of the menu, I mean, I had a little bit of things. I had it like a sandwich. I forgot what I had, though. I'll have to look at the. Is your menu online?
Yes, on my website it is.
Okay.
We have wraps and salads and quiches and soup.
Yes.
And then do the brunch from noon to 4 on Sundays. We have 4 or 5 specials a day that I do try to get more creative because they return, and I want them to have, you know, to be excited about new things.
Are you doing the cooking too?
Right now I am. My husband is a chef for 40 years, but he's homebound right now. So he started training me last January, and there we are. I do miss being in the front of the house, so I try to do both, and it's really a stitch because, you know, you can kind of tell that I'm trying to juggle. You know, I can't have my hat on or my skirt on anymore, but I am running back and forth because I do try to touch base with every single table. I think it's really important, that connection.
Yeah. And you also have the porch, too.
The veranda. I'm very lucky because on Park Avenue there's many, many restaurants. Well, yeah, there's quite a few restaurants down the street, and they have the outside tables, which in the summer is the place to be. It's one stretch. It's about, I don't know, 2 miles long. And even though I'm not on Park, I'm on the corner of Park Avenue, but I face a street called Alexander Street, I have this wonderful veranda porch that seats actually about 20, 22 people. On days like today where it's sunny and, I don't know, 70-ish.
Sunny and Cher?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very, very happy about the porch.
What do you find in terms of the menu? What do you think people like food-wise, like, enjoy? What seems to be the...
Well, we have our most popular wrap is the turkey, gouda, and cranberry, which I grill. It's by far the biggest seller. I do have a chicken Caesar wrap that comes in pretty close second. And then I keep coming up with these salads because we are pretty, you know, we do have chicken, we do have turkey. Sorry, Eunice and Esther. But we have a lot for vegetarians, and I have a berry salad, now I have a fresh peach and blueberry salad topped with a grilled chicken breast with these wonderful homemade dressings that seem to be that's how ladies like to eat.
Do you get the opportunity to use the local, meaning, in other words, from the the farms and stuff like that?
I do get the bulk of my food at our public market, which I don't know if you got to visit if you were here over on a Thursday or Saturday, but we have the most wonderful public market. They're expanding and expanding, and they have events there. Weren't you talking about Taste of the Nation or a food thing that you were going to go to, but you didn't go?
Oh, yes, I was going to go to the Taste of Rochester.
Was that at the public market?
No, that was somewhere downtown.
Oh, okay, because they also have another Taste of the Nation, I think, at the public. They do a lot, and they have just the freshest, locally grown, you know, that's and I want to, of course, go to them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I went there, I spent an hour, and I realized I should have gotten up even an hour earlier.
You did get there?
Yes, I did, but I only spent an hour.
Oh.
You know,
yeah.
And it was when you go to Esther and Eunice's blog, you'll see some of the places that we went to.
Okay.
And
well,
checked out.
Yeah, it's the best time because I know I'm guessing that you love a deal as much as I do.
Yeah.
If you go at like 2:30 on a Saturday afternoon, and they don't want to schlep. Excuse me, I shouldn't have used that word. They don't. The farmers don't want to carry, you know, take their stuff back. Boy, can you bargain! You can get a whole bushel of tomatoes for $2. I mean, it's amazing. But I of course can't get there at that hour because I'm waiting on my wonderful customers.
Oh, that's true. Well, the next time I go up to Rochester. Well, it won't do me any good because no place to do the cooking or hauling it back to New York City. But
yeah, I think they're very. We have a lot. We have like a half a dozen smaller ones in the different suburbs too. So people are really loving the short but sweet good weather we have. You know, and going to these markets are very, very popular and a lot of fun.
I also wanted to comment about that, you know, people come there and celebrate birthdays.
We do sing badly to all our customers. We put a candle inside a chocolate-covered strawberry, and I guess the more off-key and the funnier we are, especially the children are just, you know, gleefully laughing at us, and that's when we're the happiest. But it's very, a lot of celebrations. Who doesn't love a party? And I get to do that every day.
So, in other words, do you find it that like a lot of moms will do this for their daughters as you know as a birthday rather than I don't know where to go, whatever.
Yeah. Yes. They. I do a lot of children's birthdays, and my lovely aunt. Ruth Lumpert becomes Lady Rose. She's 80 years young and gives etiquette lessons to the children. And because because she was a librarian, and because we've been doing this 7 years now, including Lady Victoria's, she knows about how long to hold their attention. We typically start at 5 years old. Because it's you know 4-year-old the attention span's a little harder to hold.
Well, I'm sorry. But what were you saying? I wasn't paying attention.
I said we typically start our parties at five years old.
No, that was a joke.
Oh,
the attention span.
Sorry. I'm a little nervous. Like,
no, so am I. You're just talking to me on the telephone.
I know.
What you're doing.
I know. I love talking to you. I miss you.
Thought about five, you say?
Huh?
The kids, they thought at like at 5 years old that you have them there, that they're bringing, they're having their birthday parties.
Yeah, sometimes.
Hello? Okay.
Oh, what
noise
was that?
Again. What can I tell you?
Oh.
That's what happens when you have portable phones.
Oh, it sounded like a siren. I got worried.
Doesn't it? Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll make the exception and do 4 years old. I just need more moms to, you know.
Do you find, now, once, like, what age do they kind of stop in terms of kids?
100?
No, I mean, in terms of children, I'm sure, you in other
they
words,
don't.
Do you find a break, or it doesn't?
No.
No.
The new thing is the sweet 16. As I said, my demographics
look at that.
Is getting.
Yeah, okay.
I've done a handful of those, and again, it's not for every for every 16-year-old, but the girls really love getting dressed up, and I see children now being actually raised from 3 years old, or I don't know how young they start. They're being raised on tea, which when I was a child.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but we got tea when we were sick.
Oh yeah, same
right.
here. Same. Shove
so
that honey and lemon in, and
right.
as much whatever goes. So I can't, and it was. It's like that. I hate. That's why, in terms of tea now, I mean,
yeah.
I can't drink anything that
reminds you.
Yes, of Lipton.
Yeah, correct.
That you
so,
dipped in twice.
To see a little four-year-old come in and order chamomile or peppermint, still,
yeah, wow,
yeah, they're being raised on tea. Well, the medicinal properties are without question.
Oh,
and,
sure, especially rooibos.
Yep, that one is got, and that's not, as we spoke, that's not even a tea. It's a bush
it's
in
a,
South
yeah, it's
Africa.
A bush, yeah.
But. I put for any of anybody that's interested. Anytime anyone has an ailment, starting from a cough to a cold to a tummy ache,
right.
I mix the peppermint with chamomile, and whether it's the power of suggestion or not, things start going away and they start feeling better.
Oh, that's so good! I do things from the Wizard of Oz, and people start feeling better.
I believe you. I'm smiling already.
But anyway, look, I'm just looking at my. It says that the show is going to end in a few minutes. Anyway, so let's. So one more time, what is? Or I don't know if we said what the website is.
No. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. It's www.la-teat-da.net.
Okay.
And,
La-tida.net.
La-tida.
Okay. And also, and you sell tea too, don't you?
Yes, we sell.
I mean, not online, but.
Yeah. No, not online.
Yeah, when you're there.
No. You'd have to come on in.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll
yeah.
be up there in about a day or two.
Well, I would love to see you again, because your aura, as you can't help but smile being near you, and I didn't want to go back in the kitchen. I wanted to sit down with you.
Oh, well, maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Yeah. But I'll get up there again, I'm sure.
I can't believe I didn't think I had, I remember I was worried about what am I going to say for a half hour, and it's over. Guess I can talk.
Well, no, I could. I can direct too.
You're wonderful. You're
well,
the best director.
Things, yeah, it's all the things that I wanted to know and I wanted to share with everybody. Cause
well,
I,
thank
you, know, you
for this opportunity.
To come up there. So,
and,
Maureen, again, and thank you for calling in. And I, you know,
my
I appreciate
pleasure.
It, and I love to share things that you know that I enjoy. So.
All right. Well then, ta ta.
Yes.
La-ti-da.
La-ti-da.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ah, la-ti-da. Yes, I'm going to now, and I don't know when my next show is. Not sure. Not sure we're going to talk about, but anyway, so have a great day, evening, or whatever you have, and celebrate with tea.